I'd still be making a bunch of money. I could afford a nice place. My shithole coffin only cost $8,000 a month, but I couldn't even stand up in it. And I wanted my own bathroom. That doesn't seem like a big deal, but it is. I realized that around the 100th time I had to walk down a public hallway in my nightie to take a midnight piss. For $50,000 a month, well, within what I'd be earning, I could get a condo in Bean Bubble. A nice one with a living room, bedroom, bathroom, and its own shower. No more communal anything. I could even get a place with a cook nook. Not a kitchen, that'd be stupidly expensive. They have to be in their own fire containment rooms. But a cook nook burner was allowed to get up to 80 degrees Celsius and could have a 500-watt microwave. I shook my head. Someday, maybe. I guess my pained expression was visible even from the far end of the bar. Billy walked over.
Oi, Jez, why so glum?
Money, I said. Never enough money.
I hear you loaf.
He leaned in.
So, remember when I contracted your services for some pure ethanol?
Sure, I said. In a concession to basic human nature, Artemis allows liquor even though it's flammable. But they draw the line at pure ethanol, which is incredibly flammable. I smuggled it in the usual way and only charged Billy a 20% markup. That's my friends and family rate. He looked left and right. A couple of regulars minded their own business. Other than that, we were alone.
I want to show you something.
He reached under the bar and pulled up a bottle of brown liquid. He poured some into a shot glass.
Here, have a sip.
I could smell the alcohol from a meter away.
What is it? Balmore single malt scotch. Aged 15 years. Give it a try. On the house.
I'm never one to turn down a free drink. I took a sip.
I spat it out in disgust. It tasted like Satan's flaming asshole.
He said. No good. I coughed and wiped my mouth. That is not scotch. He looked at the bottle with a frown.
I had a bloke on earth boil the liquids off and send me the extract. I reconstituted it with water and ethanol. Should be exactly the same.
Well, it's not, I rasped.
Scotch is an acquired taste.
Billy, I've swallowed better tasting stuff that came out of people.
Bugger.
He put the bottle away.
I'll keep working on it.
I gulped beer to wash the taste away. My gizmo beeped at me. A message from Trond. Free tonight? Can you drop by my place?
Meh.
I was just starting my evening beers. It's late. Can it wait? Best if handled tonight. I'm just sitting down to dinner. You can drink dinner later. This is worth your time, I promise. Smartass. Looks like I have to cash out, I told Billy.
Pull the other one, he said. You've only had one pint.
Duty calls. I handed him my gizmo. He took it to the register.
One pint. Lowest tab I ever rung you for.
I won't make a habit of it. He waved my gizmo over the register, then handed it back to me. The transaction was done. I'd long ago set up my account to accept Hartnell's as a no-verified point of purchase. I slid the gizmo into my pocket and headed out. The other patrons didn't say goodbye or even acknowledge me. God, I love Hartnell's. Irina opened the door and frowned at me like I'd just pissed in her borscht. As usual, she wouldn't let me pass without stating my business. Hi, I'm Jazz Bashara. I said we've met over 100 times. I'm here to see Trond at his invitation. She led me through the dining hall entrance. The smell of delicious food hung in the air. Something meaty, I thought. Roast beef? A rare delicacy when the nearest cow is 400,000 kilometers away. I peeked in to see Trond sip liquor from a tumbler. He wore his usual bathrobe and chatted with someone across the table. I couldn't see who. His daughter Lene sat next to him. She watched her father talk with rapt fascination. Most 16-year-olds hate their parents. I was a huge pain in the ass to my dad at that age. Nowadays, I'm just a general disappointment. But Lene looked up to Trond like he put the earth in the sky. She spotted me, then waved excitedly.
Jazz, hi!
Trond gestured me in.
Jazz, come in, come in. Have you met the administrator?
I walked in and, holy shit, Administrator Ngugi was there. She was just there, hanging out at the table. Fidelis Ngugi is, simply put, the reason Artemis exists. When she was Kenya's Minister of Finance, She created the country's entire space industry from scratch. Kenya had one, and only one, natural resource to offer space companies, the equator. Spacecraft launched from the equator could take full advantage of Earth's rotation to save fuel. But Ngugi realized they could offer something more. Policy. Western nations drowned commercial space companies in red tape. Ngugi said, fuck that. How about we don't? I'm paraphrasing here. God only knows how she convinced 50 corporations from 34 countries to dump billions of dollars into creating KSC. But she did it. And she made sure Kenya enacted special tax breaks and laws just for the new megacorporation. What's that, you say? Favoring a single company with special laws isn't fair? Tell that to the East India Tea Company. This is global economics, not kindergarten. And wouldn't you know it, when KSC had to pick someone to run Artemis for them, they picked Fidelis Ngugi. That's how shit gets done. She pulled money out of nowhere, created a huge industry in her formerly third world country, and landed herself a job as ruler of the moon. She had run Artemis for over 20 years. Bwah, I said eloquently. Sha, I know, right? Said Lene. Ngugi's traditional duku headscarf counterpointed her modern Western-style dress. She stood politely, walked toward me, and said, Hello, dear. Her Swahili-accented English rolled so smoothly off her tongue, I wanted to adopt her as my grandma right then and there. Jasmine, I stammered. I'm Jasmine Bashara. I know, she said. What? She smiled. We have met before. I hired your father to install an emergency air shelter in my home. He brought you along. That was back when the administrator's quarters were in Armstrong bubble. Wow. I don't remember that at all. You were very young. Such an adorable little child, hanging on her father's every word. How is Amar these days? I blinked a couple of times. Dad's fine. Thanks. I don't see him much. He's got his shop and I've got my work. He is a good man, your father, she said. An honest businessman and a hard worker. One of the best welders in town as well. It's too bad you had a falling out. Wait, how did you know we... Lene, it's been lovely to see you again. You're so grown up now.
Thanks, administrator.
Lene beamed. Entrant, thank you for a delicious meal, she said. Anytime, administrator.
Tron stood up. I couldn't believe he was in his bathrobe. He had dinner with the most important person on the moon, and he wore his bathrobe? Then he shook Googie's hands like they were equals or something.
Thanks for coming by.
Irina showed up and led Ngugi away. Was there a hint of admiration in the grumpy old Russian's face? I guess even Irina had her limits. You can't hate everyone.
Holy shit, dude, I said to Trond.
Pretty cool, huh?
Trond turned to his daughter.
All right, Pumpkin, time for you to skedaddle. Jess and I have business to discuss.
She groaned the way only teenage girls can.
You always send me away when things get interesting. Don't be in such a hurry. You'll be a cutthroat business asshole soon enough. Just like my dad, she smiled.
She reached to the floor and picked up her crutches. They were the kind that gripped the upper arm. She got them both into position with ease and brought herself vertical. Her legs hung free. She kissed Trond on the cheek, then walked out on the crutches without her feet touching the ground. The car accident that killed her mother had paralyzed Lene for life. Trond had money coming out of his ass, but nothing could buy back his daughter's ability to walk. Or could it? On Earth, Lene was confined to a wheelchair, but on the moon, she could easily move around on crutches. So he hired VPs to manage most of his companies and relocated to Artemis. And just like that, Lene Lonvik could walk again.
Bye, Jess, she said on her way out.
Bye, kiddo. Trond swirled his drink.
Half a seat.
The dining table was huge, so I picked a chair a couple of spaces away from Trond. What's in the glass?
Scotch. Want some?
Maybe a taste, I said. He slid the glass across to me. I took a sip.
Oh, yeah, I said. That's better.
Didn't know you were a Scotch gal, he said.
Not normally, but I had an awful approximation of it earlier today, so I needed a reminder of what it's supposed to be like. I offered the tumbler back.
Keep it.
He went to the liquor credenza, poured a second glass, and returned to his seat. So why was the administrator here? I asked. He put his feet up on the table and leaned back in his chair.
I'm hoping to buy Sanchez aluminum, and I wanted her blessing. She's fine with it.
Why would you want an aluminum company?
Because I like building businesses,
he preened theatrically.
It's my thing.
But aluminum? I mean, isn't that sort of bleh? I get the impression it's struggling as an industry.
It is, said Trond. Not like the old days when aluminum was king. Each bubble required 40,000 tons of aluminum to build, but now the population has plateaued and we're not making new bubbles anymore. Frankly, they would have gone out of business long ago if it weren't for their aluminum monopropellant fuel production, and even that barely turns a profit.
Seems like you missed the gravy train. Why get in now?
I think I can make it hugely profitable again.
How?
None of your business.
I held up my hands. Jeez, touchy. Fine, you want to make aluminum. Why not start your own company? He snorted.
If only it were that easy. It's impossible to compete with Sanchez. Literally impossible. What do you know about aluminum production?
Pretty much nothing, I said. I settled back in my chair. Trond seemed chatty tonight. Best to let him get it out of his system. And hey, as long as he talked, I got good booze.
First, they collect anortite ore. That's easy. All they have to do is pick up the right rocks. They have automated harvesters running day and night. Then they smelt the ore with the chemical and electrolysis process that takes a shitload of electricity. And I do mean a shitload. Sanchez Aluminum uses 80% of the city reactor's output.
80%? I'd never thought about it before, but 227-megawatt nuclear reactors was a bit much for a city of 2,000 people.
Yeah, but the interesting part is how they pay for it.
He pulled a rock from his pocket. It wasn't much to look at, just a gray, jagged lump like all the other lunar rocks I'd ever seen. He tossed it toward me.
Here, have some anorthite.
Yay, a rock. I plucked it out of the air as it approached. Thanks.
It's made of aluminum, oxygen, silicon, and calcium. Smelting separates it into those base elements. They sell the aluminum, that's the whole point. And they sell the silicon to glassmakers and the calcium to electricians for next to nothing, mainly to get rid of it. But there's one byproduct that's incredibly useful. Oxygen.
Yeah, and that's what we breathe, I know.
Yeah, but did you know Sanchez gets free power in exchange for that oxygen?
He had me there. Really?
Yep. It's a contract that goes back to the early days of Artemis. Sanchez makes our air, so Artemis gives Sanchez as much power as they want, completely free of charge.
They don't have to pay an electric bill. Ever.
As long as they keep making oxygen for the city. That's right. And power is the most expensive part of smelting. There's just no way I can compete. It's not fair.
Oh, poor billionaire, I said. Maybe you should have some moors installed so you can pine on them.
Yeah, rich people are evil, blah, blah, blah.
I emptied my glass. Thanks for the scotch. Why am I here? He cocked his head and looked at me. Was he carefully choosing his words? Tron never did that.
I hear you failed your EVA exam.
Ugh, I groaned. Does everyone in town know about that? Do you all meet up and talk about me when I'm not around or something?
It's a small town, Jess. I keep my ear to the ground.
I slid my glass over to him. If we're going to talk about my failures, I'll want another scotch. He passed me his full glass.
I want to hire you, and I want to pay you a lot.
I perked up. Well, okay then. Why didn't you open with that? What do you need smuggled in? Something big? He leaned forward.
It's not smuggling. It's an entirely different enterprise. I don't know if it's even in your comfort zone. You've always been honest, at least with me. Do I have your word that this will stay between us, even if you turn down the job?
Of course. One thing I picked up from Dad, always keep your bargains. He worked within the law, and I didn't, but the principle was the same. People will trust a reliable criminal more readily than a shady businessman.
That Power for Oxygen deal is the only thing standing between me and the aluminum industry. If Sanchez stops supplying oxygen, they'll be in breach of contract. Then I'll step in and offer to take it over. Same deal, free oxygen for free power.
Where would you get the oxygen, I asked. You don't have a smelter.
No rule says it has to be smelted. The city doesn't give a shit where the oxygen comes from, so long as it comes.
He steepled his fingers.
For the last 4 months, I've been collecting oxygen and storing it away. I have enough to supply the entire city's needs for over a year.
I raised an eyebrow. You can't just take city air and keep it. That's monumentally illegal.
He waved his hand dismissively. Please, I'm not an idiot. I bought the oxygen fair and square. I have standing contracts with Sanchez for regular deliveries.
You're buying oxygen from Sanchez so you can take over the oxygen contract from Sanchez? He smirked.
They make so much oxygen, the entire city doesn't breathe it fast enough. They sell it cheap to anyone who wants it. I bought it slowly, over time, through various shell businesses so no one would know I'm hoarding.
I pinched my chin. Oxygen is pretty much the definition of flammable. How'd you get the city to let you store so much?
I didn't. I bought huge holding tanks outside Armstrong Bubble. They're in the triangle formed by the connector tunnels of Armstrong, Bean, and Shepherd. Totally safe from idiot tourists, and if anything goes wrong, they'll just leak into the vacuum. They're connected to life support systems, but they're separated by a physical valve outside. No harm can come to the city.
Huh. I spun my glass on the table. You want me to stop Sanchez's oxygen production?
Yes, I do.
He stood from his chair and walked over to the liquor credenza. This time he selected a bottle of rum.
The city will want a fast resolution and I'll get the contract. Once that happens, I won't even have to build my own smelter. Sanchez will see the futility of trying to make aluminum without free power, and they'll let me buy them outright.
He poured himself a fresh drink and returned to the table. There he opened a panel to reveal a bunch of controls. The room lights faded and a projection screen came to life on the far wall. Are you a supervillain or something? I gestured to the screen. I mean, come on.
Like it? I just had it installed.
The screen showed a satellite picture of our local area in Mare Tranquillitatis. Artemis was a tiny blob of circles brilliantly illuminated by sunlight.
We're in the lowlands, Tron said. There's plenty of olivine and ilmenite around. Those are great for making iron. But if you want aluminum, you need anorthite. It's rare around here, but the highlands are littered with it. So Sanchez's harvesters operate in the Moltke foothills, 3 kilometers south of here.
He turned on his gizmo's laser pointer and pointed to a region south of the city.
The harvesters are almost completely autonomous. They only call home for instructions if they get stuck or can't figure out what to do next. They're an essential part of the company's operations. They're all in one place, and they're completely unguarded.
Okay, I said. I see where this is going.
Yeah, he said. I want you to sabotage those harvesters. Take them all out at once, and make sure they can't be repaired. It'll take Sanchez at least a month to get replacements shipped here from Earth. During that time, they'll get no new anorthite. No anorthite means no oxygen production. No oxygen production means I win.
I folded my arms. I don't know if this works for me, Trond. Sanchez has like 100 employees, right? I don't want to put people out of their jobs.
Don't worry about that, Trond said. I want to buy the company, not ruin it. Everyone will keep their jobs.
Okay, but I don't know anything about harvesters. His fingers flew over the controls and the display changed to a picture of a harvester. It looked like something from a catalog.
The harvesters are Toyota Tsukurumas. I have 4 of them in my warehouse, ready for use.
Whoa, okay. Something the size of a harvester would have to be shipped in chunks and assembled here. Plus, it would have to be done in secret so no one asked awkward questions like, "Say, Tron, why is your company assembling harvesters?" He'd had his people on this for a long time. He must have seen the gears turning in my head.
Yeah, I've been working on this for a while. Anyway, you're welcome to examine my harvesters for as long as you want. All in secrecy, of course.
I got out of my chair and walked up to the screen. Man, that harvester was a beast. So it's my problem to find a weakness in these things? I'm not an engineer.
They're automated vehicles without any security features at all. You're clever. I'm sure you'll come up with something.
Okay, but What happens if I get caught?
Jess who?
He said theatrically.
The delivery girl? I barely know her. Why would she do such a thing? I'm baffled.
I see how it is.
I'm just being honest. Part of the deal is your word that you won't drag me down if you get caught.
Why me? What makes you think I can even pull this off?
Jess, I'm a businessman, he said. My whole job is exploiting underutilized resources, and you are a massively underutilized resource.
He stood and walked to the credenza for another pour.
You could have been anything. Didn't want to be a welder? No problem. You could have been a scientist, an engineer, a politician, a business leader, anything, but you're a porter.
I scowled.
I'm not judging, he said, just analyzing. You're really smart, and you want money. I need someone who's really smart, and I have money. Are you interested?
I took a moment to think. Was it even possible? I'd need access to an airlock. There are only 4 airlocks in the whole city, and you have to be a licensed EVA guild member to use them. Their control panels check your gizmo. Then there was a 3-kilometer trip to the Moltke foothills. How would I do that? Walk? And once I was there, what would I do? The harvesters would have cameras and film everything in a 360-degree arc for navigational purposes. How would I sabotage them without getting spotted? Also, I smelled bullshit in the air. Trond had been squirrely and evasive about his reasons for getting into aluminum. But it was my ass on the line if something went wrong, not his. And if I got caught, I'd get exiled to Earth. I probably couldn't stand up on Earth, let alone live there. I'd been in lunar gravity since I was 6. No. I was a smuggler, not a saboteur. And something smelled off about the whole thing. I'm sorry, but this isn't my thing, I said. You'll have to find someone else.
I'll give you 1,000,000 slugs.
Deal.
Yo, Kelvin!
What's new? Haven't heard from you in a few days. Did you get into the chess club? What kind of junior high chess club has entrance requirements anyway? Are they so impacted with applicants they have to turn some away? What, like they don't have enough chess boards? Only so many tables? Limited number of pocket protectors? My school is trying to put me in the gifted classes again. Dad totally wants me to go, but why should I? I'm probably just going to be a welder. I don't need differential calculus to stick pieces of metal together. Sigh. Hey, so what happened with Charisse? Did you ask her out? Or talk to her? Or indicate in any way that you exist? Or are you sticking with your brilliant plan to avoid her at all costs?
Jez, sorry. I've been busy with extracurricular stuff lately. Yes, I got into the chess club. I played several games to establish my skill level, and they rated me 11-4. That's not very good, but I'm studying and practicing to become better. I play against my computer every day, and now I'll get to play against people too. Why don't you join the gifted classes? Academic achievement is a great way to honor your parents. You should consider it. I'm sure your father would be very proud. My parents would love it if I could get into the advanced classes. But math is hard. I keep my grades up, but it's hard. I have resolve, though. I want to make rockets, and you can't do that without math. No, I haven't talked to Charisse. I'm sure she wouldn't be interested in a boy like me. Girls like boys who are big and strong, and who beat up other boys. I'm none of those things. If I talked to her, I would just get humiliated.
Kelvin, dude, I don't know where you're getting info about girls, but you're wrong. Girls like boys who are nice and make us laugh. We don't like boys who get in fights, and we don't like boys who are stupid. Trust me on this. I'm a girl. Dad has me helping out around the shop. I can solo the simpler jobs. He pays me, which is nice. But he stopped my allowance now that I have an income. So now I'm working for a little bit more than I was getting for free. Not sure I'm on board with that plan, but whatever. Dad's having problems with the Welders Guild. Around here, you can either be freelance or part of the guild. And the guild doesn't like freelancers. Dad doesn't have a problem with guilds as a rule, but he says the Welders Guild is mobbed up. I guess they're pretty much owned by Saudi organized crime. Why Saudi? I don't know. Almost all the welders here are Saudis. We're just the people who ended up controlling the welding industry. Anyway, the guild forces people to join with bullshit tactics, not like in movies where they threaten you or anything, just rumor mongering, floating stories that you're dishonest and you do shitty work, stuff like that. But Dad spent his whole life building a reputation. The fake rumors just bounce off. None of his customers believe them. Go Dad.
Jess, that's too bad about the Welders Guild. There are no unions or guilds at KSC. It's a special administrative zone, and the normal laws that help unions don't apply. KSC has a lot of power in the Kenyan government. There are many special laws for them. But KSC is a boon to all of us, and they deserve special treatment. Without them, we would be poor, like other African countries. Have you ever considered moving to Earth? I'm sure you could become a scientist or an engineer and make a lot of money. You're a citizen of Saudi Arabia, right? They have lots of big corporations there. Lots of jobs for smart people.
Calvin, nah, I don't want to live on Earth. I'm a moon gal. Besides, it would be a huge medical hassle. I've been here more than half my life, so my body is used to 1/6 of your gravity. Before I could go to Earth, I'd have to do a bunch of exercise and take special pills to stimulate muscle and bone growth, and I'd have to spend hours every day in a centrifuge. Blech. No thanks. Talk to Charisse, you chicken shit. Chapter 3. I slinked along a huge corridor in Aldrin down 7. I didn't really have to sneak around. At this ungodly hour, no one was in sight. 5 a.m. was a largely theoretical concept to me. I knew it existed, but I rarely observed it, nor did I want to. But this morning was different. Trond insisted on secrecy, so we had to meet before normal working hours. Barn doors towered every 20 meters. The lots here were few and large, a testament to how much money these businesses had handy. Tron's company workshop was labeled only with a sign reading LD7-4030, Landvik Industries. I knocked on the door. A second later, it slid partially open. Tron poked his head out and looked both ways down the hall.
Were you followed?
Of course, I said, and I led them straight to you. Turns out I'm not very bright.
Smartass.
Dumbass.
Come in.
He gestured me forward. I slipped in and he immediately closed the door. I didn't know if he thought this was stealthy or what, but hey, he was paying me a million slugs. We could play 007 if he wanted. The workshop was effectively a garage. A huge garage. Seriously, I'd kill to have that space. I'd make a little house in one corner and then, I don't know, install fake grass in the rest of it. 4 identical harvesters, each in its own bay, filled the room. I walked over to the nearest harvester and looked up at it. Wow.
Yeah, Tron said. You don't realize how big they are until you see one up close.
How did you get them into town without anyone knowing?
It wasn't easy, Tron said. I had them shipped here in pieces. Only my most trusted people even know about it. I pieced together a staff of 7 mechanics who know how to keep their mouths shut.
I scanned the cavernous workshop. Anyone else here?
Of course not. I don't want anyone knowing I hired you.
Oh, I'm hurt. The harvester stood 4 meters tall, 5 meters wide, and 10 meters long. Reflective material coated the hull to minimize solar heating. Each of the beast's 6 wheels was 1.5 meters across. The bulk of the machine was a huge empty basin. Powerful hydraulics on the front and a hinge on the rear provided the basin's dumping mechanism. The front of the harvester had a scoop with associated articulation. There was no passenger compartment, of course. Harvesters were automated, though they could be remote controlled when necessary. A sealed metal box rested where you might expect a cockpit. It bore the Toyota logo, along with the word Sukuruma in a stylish font. Roll-around toolboxes and maintenance equipment surrounded the harvester wherever the workers had left off at the end of their shift. Okay, I said, taking in the scene. This is going to be a challenge.
What's the problem?
Tron walked over to one of the wheels and leaned against it.
It's just a robot. It doesn't have any defenses. Its only AI is for pathing. I'm sure you and a big tank of acetylene could figure something out.
This thing is a tank, Trond. It's not going to be easy to kill. I walked partially around the harvester and got a closer look at the undercarriage. And it's got cameras everywhere.
Of course it does, said Trond. It needs them to navigate.
It sends video back to its controllers, I said. Once it goes offline, the controllers will roll back to footage to see what happened. They'll see me.
So cover up any identifying marks on your EVA suit, Tron said. No problem.
Oh, there's a problem. They'll call the EVA masters to ask what the hell's going on, and then the EVA masters will come out to get me. They won't know who I am, but they can drag my ass back inside and have a Scooby-Doo moment when they pull my helmet off. He walked around to my side of the harvester.
I see your point.
I ran my hands through my hair. I hadn't showered that morning. I felt like I was a wad of grease that had been dipped in a vat of dirtier grease. I need to come up with something that has a delayed effect, so it'll happen after I get back inside.
And don't forget, you've got to total the things. If there's anything left to fix, Sanchez's repair crews will have them up and running in days.
Yeah, I know. I pinched my chin. Where's the battery?
In the forward compartment. The box with the Toyota logo on it.
I found a primary breaker box near the forward compartment. Inside were the main breakers to protect their electronics from power surges or shorts. Worth noting. I leaned up against a nearby tool cabinet. When they're full, they take their stuff to the smelter?
Yeah.
He picked up a wrench and threw it into the air. It lofted toward the ceiling. Then they, what, dump their load and go back to Moltke?
After they recharge.
I ran my hand along the sleek reflective metal of the basin. How big's the battery?
2.4 megawatt hours.
Wow, I turned to him. I could arc weld with that kind of juice. He shrugged.
Hauling 100 tons of rocks takes energy.
I climbed under the harvester. How does it deal with heat rejection? Wax state change material?
No idea.
When you're in a vacuum, getting rid of heat is a problem. There's no air to carry it away. And when you have electric power, every joule of energy ultimately becomes heat. It might be from electrical resistance, friction in moving parts, or chemical reactions in the battery that release the energy in the first place. But ultimately, it all ends up as heat. Artemis has a complex coolant system that conveys the heat to thermal panels near the reactor complex. They sit in the shade and slowly radiate the energy away as infrared light. But the harvesters had to be self-contained. After some searching, I found what I was looking for. The heat rejection system valve. I recognized the type immediately. Dad and I had attached many of these in the past while repairing rovers. Yeah, it's wax, I said. I saw Tron's feet approach.
What's that mean? He asked.
The battery and motor housings are encased in a solid wax reservoir. Melting the wax takes a lot of energy, so that's where the heat goes. The wax lines are surrounded by coolant pipes. When the harvester comes home to recharge, they pump cold water into those pipes to rechill the wax, then pull the newly heated water back out. Then they cool the water off at their leisure while the harvester gets back to work.
So can you make the harvesters overheat? He asked. Is that your plan?
It's not that simple. There are safeties to prevent overheating. The harvesters would just shut down until they cooled off. Sanchez's engineers would fix the problem right away. I have a different idea. I wriggled out from under the harvester, stood, and stretched my back. Then I climbed the side and dropped into the basin. My voice echoed as I spoke. Can any of its cameras see and hear?
Why? He asked. Oh, you're going to ride a harvester to the Moltke foothills.
Trond, can the cameras see and hear?
No. Their purpose is navigation. They point outward. Hey, how will you get out of the city? You don't have airlock privileges.
Don't worry about it. I climbed out of the basin and dropped 4 meters to the ground. I pulled a chair toward me, spun it around, and straddled it. I rested my chin on my palm and got lost in thought. Tron sidled over.
So?
Thinking, I said.
Do women know how sexy they look when they sit like that?
Of course.
I knew it.
Trying to concentrate.
Sorry.
I peered at the harvester for several minutes. Tron wandered aimlessly around the bay and fiddled with tools. He was an entrepreneurial genius, but he had the patience of a 10-year-old. Okay, I finally said. I have a plan.
Yeah?
Tron dropped a socket driver and scurried over.
Do tell.
I shook my head. Don't worry about the details.
I like details.
A lady's got to have her secrets. I stood up. But I'll completely destroy their harvesters.
That sounds great.
All right, I said. I'm going home. I need a shower.
Yeah, said Trond. You really do.
Once I got back to my coffin, I threw off my clothes faster than a drunk prom date. On with the bathrobe and off to the showers. I even paid the extra 200 slugs for a soak in a tub. Felt good. I spent the day doing deliveries as usual. I didn't want some perceptive asshole to notice a break in my routine immediately before a huge crime got committed. Just a normal day. No need to look at me whistling innocently. I worked until about 4 p.m. I went home, lay down. It's not like I could stand up. And did some research. I envy one thing about Earthers. They get much faster internet. We have a local network in Artemis that's handy for slug transactions and email. But when it comes to web searches, all those servers are back on Earth. And that means an absolute minimum of 4 seconds wait for every request. The speed of light just isn't as fast as I'd like. I drank so much tea I had to jog to the communal bathroom every 20 minutes. After hours of work, I came to a conclusion. I really wanted my own bathroom. But by the end of it, I had a plan. And like all good plans, it required a crazy Ukrainian guy. I pulled Trigger up to the ESA Research Center and parked in the narrow hallway. Space agencies around the world were the first to rent property in Artemis. In the old days, Armstrong Ground was the best real estate in town. Since then, 4 more bubbles sprang up, and the space agencies remained. Their once cutting-edge design was now 2 decades out of date. I hopped off Trigger and went into the labs. The first room, a tiny reception area, was a throwback to the days when real estate was much more limited. 4 hallways led off at odd angles. Some of the doors couldn't be opened if others were open. The ergonomic abortion was the result of 17 governments designing a laboratory by committee. I went through the center door, down the hallway almost to the end, and into the microelectronics lab. Martin Svoboda hunched over a microscope and reached absently for his coffee. His hand passed 3 beakers of deadly acid before he grabbed the mug and took a sip. I swear that idiot's going to kill himself someday. He'd been assigned to Artemis by ESA 4 years ago to study microelectronic manufacturing methods. Apparently, the moon has some unique advantages in that area. The ESA lab is a highly coveted posting, so he must have been good at his job. Svoboda, I said. Nothing. He hadn't noticed me come in and didn't hear me speak. He's like that. I smacked him on the back of the head and he jerked away from the microscope. He smiled like a child seeing a beloved aunt.
Oh, hi, Jazz. What's up?
I sat on the lab stool opposite him. I need some mad science from you.
Cool.
He spun his stool to face me.
What can I do?
I need electronics. I pulled schematics out of my pocket and handed them over. This, or something like it.
Paper.
He held the schematics like they were a urine sample.
You wrote them on paper.
I don't know how to use drafting apps, I said. Just, what do you think? He unfolded the paper and frowned at my scribblings. Svoboda was the best electrical engineer in town. Something like this shouldn't be a challenge for him. He turned the sketch sideways.
Did you draw this with your left hand or something?
I'm not an artist, okay? He pinched his chin.
Art quality aside, this is an elegant design. Did you copy it from somewhere?
No. Why? Is something wrong? He raised his brow.
It's really well done.
Thanks.
I never knew you were so talented.
I shrugged. I found electronics tutorials online and worked from there.
You taught yourself?
He looked back to the schematic.
How long did it take?
Most of the afternoon.
You learned all this today? You'd make a great scientist.
Stop. I held up my hand. I don't want to hear it. Can you make it or not?
Sure, sure, he said. When do you need it?
The sooner the better. He tossed the schematics on the lab table.
I can have it for you tomorrow.
Great. I hopped off the stool and whipped out my gizmo. How much? He hesitated. Never a good sign during negotiations. He'd done odd jobs for me for years, mostly removing anti-piracy chips from smuggled electronics. He usually charged 2,000 slugs for freelance work. Why was this time different?
2,000 slugs? I suggested.
He said. Would you consider a trade?
Sure, I put my gizmo away. Need something smuggled in?
No.
I see. God damn it, I'm a smuggler. Why did people keep asking for other shit? He stood and gestured for me to follow. I went with him to the back corner of his lab where he did his off-book work. Why buy your own equipment when the taxpayers of Europe will buy it for you?
Behold,
he gestured to the table. The item in the middle wasn't much to look at. Just a small, clear plastic box with something inside. I took a closer look. Is that a condom?
Yes, he said proudly. My latest invention.
The Chinese beat you by 7 centuries.
This is not your everyday condom.
He slid a thermos-sized cylinder over to me. It had a power cable and a hinged top.
It comes with this.
I opened the top. Tiny holes inside adorned the walls, and a rounded metal cylinder stood mounted to the bottom. Okay?
I can make a profit by selling these kits for 3,000 slugs each.
Condoms only cost 50 slugs. Why would anyone buy this? He grinned.
It's reusable.
I blinked. Are you shitting me?
Not at all. It's made of a thin but durable material. Good for hundreds of uses.
He pointed to the rounded metal part of the device.
After each use, you turn the condom inside out and put it in the cylinder.
Ew!
Then you turn on the cleaner. There's a liquid cleanse cycle and then a high temperature bake for 10 minutes. After that, it's sterile and ready to use again.
Oh, God, no.
You should probably rinse it off first.
Stop, I said. Why would anyone want something like this?
Because it saves money in the long run and it's less prone to failure than a normal condom.
I gave him my most dubious glare.
Do the math, he said. Normal condoms cost way too much. No one manufactures them locally. There's no raw materials to make latex. But my product will last through 200 uses, minimum. That's 10,000 slugs of savings.
Now he was speaking my language. Okay, maybe it's not so crazy after all, but I don't have money to invest right now. Oh, I'm not looking for investors. I need someone to test it. And you think I've got the dick for the job? He rolled his eyes.
I need to know how it feels for the woman.
I'm not having sex with you.
No, he winced. I just want you to use it the next time you have sex. Then tell me how it affected your experience.
Why don't you bang a girl and ask her yourself? He looked at his shoes.
I don't have a girlfriend, and I'm terrible with women.
There are brothels all over Aldrin, high-end, low-end, whatever you want.
That's no good.
He crossed his arms.
I need data from a woman who is having sex for fun. The woman has to be sexually experienced, which you definitely are.
Careful.
And likely to have sex in the near future, which, again...
Choose your next words wisely. He paused.
Anyway, you see what I'm after.
I groaned. Can I just pay you 2,000 slugs?
I don't need money. I need testing.
I glared at the condom. It looked normal enough. So it's effective. You're sure it won't break or anything?
Oh, definitely. I've run it through a battery of tests. Stretching, pressure, friction, you name it.
A disturbing thought popped into my head. Wait, have you used this one?
No, but it wouldn't matter if I had. The cleaning process renders it sterile.
Are you I stopped myself and took a breath. Then, as calmly as I could, I said, it would matter, Svoboda. Maybe not biologically, but psychologically. He shrugged. I deliberated for a moment, then finally said, okay, it's a deal, but I'm not promising to run out and get laid.
Sure, he said. Just whenever the next time it comes up naturally, you know?
Yeah, all right.
Excellent.
He picked up the condom box and cleaning device and handed them to me.
Call me if you have any questions.
I took the items gingerly. Not my proudest moment. But logically speaking, there was nothing wrong with it. I was just doing some product testing, right? That's not weird, right? Right? I started to leave. Then I stopped and turned back toward him. Hey, have you ever heard of something called Zappo?
No. Should I have?
Nah. Don't worry about it. I'll drop by tomorrow afternoon to pick up the device.
It's my day off. Want to meet at the park instead? Say 3 p.m.
That works, I said.
Can I ask what this thing is for?
Nope.
Okay, see you tomorrow.
Conrad down 6. I drove Trigger down the familiar hallways and tried to ignore the sinking feeling in my gut. I knew every crooked hallway, every shop, and every scratch on every wall. I could close my eyes and tell where I was just from echoes and background noise. I rounded the corner to Crafter's Row. The best tradesmen in town worked here, but there were no flashing signs or advertisements. They didn't need to draw in customers. They got their business through reputation. I parked in front of CD6-3028, got out, and hesitated at the door. I turned away in a moment of cowardice, steeled myself, then turned back and rang the buzzer. A man with a weathered face answered the door. He had a well-trimmed beard and wore a white taquilla head covering. He stared at me quietly for a moment, then said, "Huh? Good evening, father," I said in Arabic.
"Are you in trouble?"
"No."
"Do you need money?"
"No, father, I'm independent now." He furrowed his brow.
"Then why are you here?"
"Can a daughter not visit her father simply to honor him?"
"Cut the crap," he said in English. "What do you want?"
"I need to borrow some welding equipment."
"Interesting."
He left the door open and walked into the shop. That was as much invitation as I was going to get. Not much had changed over the years. The fireproofed workshop was hot and cramped, as they all were. Dad's meticulously organized equipment hung on the walls. A work table dominated one corner of the room next to a collection of welding masks.
"Come on,"
he said. I followed him through the back door into the residence. The tiny living room was palatial compared to my humble shithole. Dad's place had 2 coffin bunks along one wall. Very common among lower-class Artemisians. Not as nice as bedrooms, but they allowed privacy, which was good. I grew up in that house. I did stuff in that bunk. He had a cook nook with an actual flame-based stove. One of the few advantages to living in a fireproofed home. Way better than a microwave. You might think a real stove meant tasty meals, but you'd be wrong. Dad did his best, but gunk is gunk. There's only so much you can do with algae. There was one big change, though. Along the back wall, a meter-wide sheet of metal ran from the floor to the ceiling. It wasn't even close to vertical. I'd estimate 20 to 30 degrees off true. I pointed to the new feature. "What the hell is that?" Dad looked over to it.
"It's an idea I came up with a while ago."
"What's it for?"
"Work it out."
Ugh! If I had a slug for every time he'd said that in my life. Never a straight answer. Everything had to be a goddamn learning experience. He crossed his arms and watched me like he always did during these little quizzes. I walked over and touched the sheet. Very sturdy, of course. He never did anything half-assed. 2-millimeter sheet aluminum?
Correct.
So it doesn't need to handle lateral force. I ran my finger along the intersection of the sheet and the wall. I felt small bumps every 20 centimeters. Spot welds? That's not like you. He shrugged.
It might be a stupid idea. I'm not ready to commit.
2 hooks jutted out from the top of the sheet, just centimeters from the ceiling. You're gonna hang something on it?
Correct. But what?
I looked it up and down. This weird angle is the key. Got a protractor I could borrow?
I'll save you the trouble, he said. It's 22.9 degrees from vertical.
Huh, I said. Artemis's longitude is 22.9. Ah, okay, I got it. I turned to face him. It's for prayers.
Correct, he said. I call it a prayer wall.
The moon always points the same face toward Earth. So even though we're in orbit, from our point of view, Earth doesn't move. Well, technically, it wobbles a bit because of lunar libration, but don't worry your pretty little head about that. Point is, Earth is fixed in the sky. It rotates in place and goes through phases, but it doesn't move. The ramp pointed at Earth so Dad could face Mecca while praying. Most Muslims here just faced west. That's what Dad had done all my life. How will you use it, I asked. Special straps or something? I mean, it's almost vertical.
Don't be ridiculous.
He put both hands on the prayer wall and leaned forward into it.
Like this, simple and easy. And it's more in keeping with Qibla than facing west on the moon.
Seems silly, Dad. It's not like Muslims in Australia dig a hole and face down. You think Muhammad's going to be impressed?
Hey, he said sharply, if you're not going to practice Islam, you don't get to talk about the Prophet.
All right, I said. I pointed to the hooks. What are those for?
Work it out.
Ugh, I said. Then I grudgingly added, for attaching a prayer rug?
Correct.
He walked to a table near the cook nook and sat in one of the chairs.
I don't want to poke holes in my usual prayer rug, so I ordered another one from Earth. It'll be here in a few weeks.
I sat in the other chair where I'd had countless meals throughout my life. Do you have a shipping manifest number? I can arrange to get here faster.
No thanks.
Dad, there's nothing illegal about pulling strings to...
No thanks, he said a little louder this time. Let's not argue about it.
I gritted my teeth but kept quiet. Time for a change of subject. Weird question. Have you ever heard of something called Sappho? You raised an eyebrow.
Isn't that an ancient Greek lesbian?
No, that's Sappho.
Oh, then no. What is it?
No idea, I said. Just something I saw in passing and wondered about.
You've always been curious. You're great at finding answers, too. Maybe you should put your genius to work on something useful for a change.
Dad, I said with a hint of warning in my voice.
Fine.
He folded his arms.
So, you need welding equipment.
Yeah.
Last time you had access to my equipment, it didn't go well.
I stiffened. I tried not to break eye contact, but I couldn't help myself. I looked at the floor. He took a softer tone.
I'm sorry. That was uncalled for.
No, it wasn't, I said. We had an uncomfortable silence. We'd mastered that art over the years.
Well, he said awkwardly. So, what do you need?
I cleared my head. I didn't have time for gnawing guilt. I need a torch, a couple tanks of acetylene, a tank of O2, and a mask.
What about neon?
He asked. I winced. Right, yeah, neon, of course.
You're getting rusty, he said.
I didn't need neon, but I couldn't tell him that. When you weld aluminum, you need to flood it with a non-reactive gas to keep the surface from oxidizing. On Earth, they use argon because it's massively abundant, but we don't have noble gases on the moon, so we have to ship them in from Earth. And neon weighs half as much as argon, so that's what we use. It didn't matter to me because I'd be working in a vacuum. No oxygen to oxidize the metal, but I didn't want him to know that. Also, I'd be cutting steel, not aluminum. But again, no reason to share that with Dad.
So, what's this for?
He asked. I'm installing an air shelter for a friend. I'd lied to Dad more times than I could count, especially when I was a teen. But every time, every damn time, it tied my stomach in knots.
Why doesn't your friend hire a welder? He asked.
She did. She hired me.
Oh, so you're a welder now.
He widened his eyes theatrically.
After years of telling me you didn't want to do it.
I sighed. Dad, it's just a friend who wants an air shelter in her bedroom. I'm barely charging her for it. Residential air shelters were common, especially among recent immigrants. Newcomers tend to be paranoid about the whole deadly vacuum outside thing. It's irrational. Artemis's hull is extremely safe, but fear isn't logical. In practice, personal air shelters quickly become closets.
What's the illegal part?
He asked. I gave him a hurt look. Why would you assume there's...
What's the illegal part? He repeated.
Her apartment's in Armstrong up against the inner hull. I have to weld the shelter directly to it. The city requires all sorts of extra inspections if you weld to the inner hull, and she can't afford them.
He said. Pointless bureaucracy. Even the most rank amateur couldn't damage a 6-centimeter plate of aluminum.
I know, right? I said. He folded his arms and frowned.
Darned city getting in the way of business.
Preach.
All right, take what you want. But you have to reimburse me for the acetylene and neon.
Right, of course, I said.
You all right? You look kind of pale.
I was about ready to puke. Lying to Dad transported me back to my teen years. And let me tell you, there's no one I hate more than teenage Jazz Bashara. That stupid bitch made every bad decision a stupid bitch could make. She's responsible for where I am today. I'm fine, just a little tired.
Dear Jazz, I got a big poster of the Rusa for my birthday. What a magnificent ship. It's the largest space liner ever built. It can hold up to 200 passengers. I'm learning all about it. I'm a little obsessed, but who cares? It's fun. The ship is a marvel. It has full centripetal gravity, with a radius large enough that no one will get dizzy. It even helps people adjust to lunar gravity. They gradually slow the rotation over the 7-day trip to the moon. So when people first board, the passenger decks are at 1G, and by the time they reach the moon, they're at 1/6G. They do the reverse on the way back to get folks accustomed to 1G again. How cool is that? I still don't understand the Uphoff-Crouch-Cycler orbit, though. I get that it's a ballistic orbit that goes back and forth between the Earth and the Moon, but it's really weird. It's like, start at Earth, then it's at the Moon 7 days later, then it flings up way out of the Earth-Moon plane and comes back to the Moon 14 days later. Somewhere in there just sits in an elliptical orbit around Earth for a couple of weeks. I don't get it, and I won't try. Point is, it's an awesome ship. Someday, when I'm a rich rocket designer, I'm going to visit Artemis. We can have tea. Hey, when you and your dad moved to Artemis, did you go there on the Rusa?
Dear Kelvin, nah, the Rusa hadn't been built yet when we moved here. We came over on the Collins, the only space liner that existed at the time. It was 10 years ago. I was only 6, so I don't remember all the details. But I remember we didn't have artificial gravity. It was 0G everywhere. I had a shitload of fun bouncing around. You got me curious about the orbit stuff, so I looked it up. It seems pretty straightforward. The ship goes through a cycle with each step taking 7 days. Earth to moon, deep space out of moon, moon plane. Moon to Earth, deep space in the Earth, moon plane. Earth. And it repeats that over and over. If the moon stood still, they could just go back and forth. But it's moving around Earth once per month, which complicates the hell out of the cycler. I looked up the math behind how orbits work and then checked their numbers against those equations. It was pretty simple. You can do it in your head. Dear Jazz, maybe you can do it in your head. I would give anything to be as smart as you, but I'm not. That's okay. I work hard instead, and you're lazy as hell.
Dear Kelvin, how dare you call me lazy?
I'd come up with a scathing retort, but meh, I'm just not motivated. Hey, I need advice. Edgar and I are going on our 4th date. We've been making out a lot, just kissing, nothing else. I want to escalate, but I don't want to move too fast. I'm not ready to get naked yet. Any recommendations?
Dear Jazz, boobs.
Dear Kelvin, seriously, that simple? Dear Jazz.
Yes.
Chapter 4. The next morning, I woke up naked in a plush, comfortable bed. No, there wasn't anyone with me. Get your mind out of the gutter. I just wanted to get a taste of what life would be like once I got that million slugs. I stretched out my arms and arched my back. What a fantastic night's sleep. Unlike my shitty coffin, this room had excellent noise insulation. No neighbors waking me up with screaming arguments or loud sex. No booming hallway conversations bleeding in. No drunk idiots stumbling into walls. And the bed. Oh, I could lie across it widthwise and still fit. Plus the sheets and blankets were softer than velvet. The bedding felt better against my skin than my own pajamas. The room cost 2,000 slugs a night. When I got my payday from Trond, I'd get a bed like this in my beautiful, noise-proof apartment. I checked my gizmo. 11 in the morning?
Wow, I really slept. I slid out of the warm sheets and walked over to